You're listening to Turkish Football Weekly, available on the World Football Daily Club podcast feed. If you're a member of World Football Daily, you can go to the site and stream the show anytime to your computer, mobile phone, or tablet without having to download or sync anything. If you're not a member of World Football Daily, just search World Football Daily Club podcast in the iTunes store and download the World Football Daily Club podcast feed for free. Enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Turkish Football Weekly for the week of October 3rd, 2013. My name is Atatürk Dizdar, and joining me once again is Jeremy Chapman. Jeremy, we've got a lot of soccer things to talk about, but not only in Turkey, but we might briefly have to say something for our soccer teams here in the States. So I had heard you were at an Indy 11 function, so how was that?
That was awesome. That was on Tuesday. The event was called First on the First, and I think it was there. It was called that because they were revealing the first player that they signed, the goalkeeper, Christian Nicht. Then they also revealed who the sponsors are, the team, that kind of thing. Of course, the season doesn't start till April, but all this stuff kind of starts coming together. And, it's exciting to start, you know, learning who the players are going to be and seeing the jerseys and stuff. So it was a nice October evening and a good event. Do you have stuff going on in the world of football, soccer near you?
Well, DC United won the 100th edition of the U.S. Open Cup, so therefore they got to qualify for the CONCACAF Champions League, and a bit of a recovery from this lost season where they've only won three times the entire season, so maybe next year, if Indy 11 and DC United should happen to meet up in the U.S. Open Cup, I might either have to take a trip down to Indiana, or you might have to take a trip over my direction.
That's true. That's very true. And that'd be sweet if that happened. I don't have a lot of high hopes I have high hopes, I guess, but maybe not expectations, you'd say, for Indy 11 success the first season. But they'll definitely have the support they need from us. But give us a season or two before we start winning the Open Cup.
Okay. So let's move on to Turkish soccer then. It's the Turkish Super League Week 6 results. We'll start off with Friday and Saturday results. Friday's only results saw Bursaspor tie Akhisar Belediyespor 0-0. Saturday's results saw Gaziantepspor getting their first win of the season by beating Karabükspor 3-0 and Galatasaray drawing Rizespor 1-1. Disappointing from Bursaspor, I think. They've only got about 5 points in 6 games, and you know, it still reminds me of why did they fire Hikmet Karaman right before the season started, brought in Christoph Daum, but it's been a very slow start for Bursaspor this season. When it comes down to Gaziantepspor and Karabükspor, Cenk Tosun, Serdar Özbayraktar, and Artem Beleşki with the goals for Gaziantepspor in the 55th, 79th, and 89th minutes, respectively. And I believe it was Milevski's Turkish Super League debut for Gaziantepspor. Don't quote me on that. And when we come to the Galatasaray-Rizespor match, Engin Baytar scoring for Galatasaray in the 19th minute, Tevfik Kuşa with the goal for Rizespor in the 55th minute. Selçuk İnan getting 2 yellow cards in this game in the 41st and 73rd minute. It's the first time he's actually been ejected while wearing a Galatasaray uniform. He hasn't been ejected for a while. I think the last time he got a red card in a game was back in his Manisaspor days, and that was pretty much a while ago. But for that game, it seemed like more of a story of how many opportunities Galatasaray missed. I mean, Burak Yılmaz seemed to miss a lot of chances. Didier Drogba missed a good amount of chances,
but Bruma missed like three sitters. It was painful.
Right, and it seemed as though to me, like, you know, since you mentioned Bruma, it seemed as though that Bruma was the only guy that really showed up to really play that game. This guy is probably the signing for Galatasaray so far this season, just in the way that he's playing, he's running, and his skill set. And it seemed as though that even though with the first game after Terim's departure, which we talked about in length last week, Bruma seemed like he was the only one that really well, for lack of a better term, gave a damn about the game. And for Ümit Davala and Hasan Şaş, who were coaching this game, who were Terim's assistants, and it was found out later that they weren't going to be brought back for the new coach, and we'll obviously get into more of a discussion on that later on in this week's podcast. But I got to say that the opportunities missed by Galatasaray in the Rizespor game really came back to haunt him. But if we look at it from Rizespor's perspective, they still keep going with that flying start that they've had to the season. And a draw for them in Istanbul in the Türk Telekom Arena, they'll gladly take that 1 point back to Rize.
Definitely. This was, of course, their first game in Istanbul this season. And as I was saying last week, there's their first real test because, you know, Galatasaray isn't a bottom-dwelling team, which is all Rize had seen up to this point. So kudos on them. But, like you say, the story out of this game is really just Galatasaray. You can count maybe on two hands, probably, you know, the number of opportunities that you thought were, you know, 80 or 90% going to be a goal, and a few opportunities which were used to use, as they say, right?
And, right, 100%. That was the 100%.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So Bruma was impressive. He had a lot of really good runs. He just couldn't seem to get that last kick to go quite how he wanted. But to all the people who are sort of like really pessimistic about Galatasaray this season, they still haven't lost, you know, and they still and they show a lot of good potential. It's just a matter of connecting the dots sometimes. And maybe once they settle into a new coach, that'll come more easily. I would give them some more time. But, you know, you were saying Bursaspor is not doing so well, and Akhisar Belediye still hasn't even scored on the road. Actually, all eight of their goals have come at home, and so things are looking pretty good for Bursaspor to get a win there, and couldn't get that done. So, and then Gaziantepspor, man, they get their first win of the season. And did it seem to you like every time they scored, just sort of the looks on everyone else's faces was kind of like disbelief? It was like they didn't know what was going on.
Right. It seemed as though that they were pretty shocked by themselves why they were scoring, or, you know, but they get three goals, and, you know, that hot seat just becomes a little bit cooler for them. And at least for Gaziantepspor, I think, you know, it may be the start of something better because they still have to get out of that basement. But in the Bursaspor match, they were chanting for the board to resign. You know, when things don't go well, all these Turkish club fans always chant for the board to resign. But, it's just disappointing for Bursaspor so far. I would have thought that they would have had a much better performance this far into the season.
Well, they'll have another chance this weekend when they go to play Karabükspor, who hasn't actually scored in three games in a row. So, you know, Karabükspor losing to Gaziantep 3-0. It's been more than 270 regular time minutes since they last found the back of the net. So maybe Bursaspor will have better luck this weekend.
All right, so let's move on to Sunday results. Elazığspor loses to Sivasspor 4-2. Trabzonspor at home beats Konyaspor 2-0. Eskişehirspor beats Kasımpaşa in Istanbul by the same score of 2-0. And Fenerbahçe beats Gençlerbirliği in Ankara 1-0. Let's start off with the Elazığspor-Sivasspor match first. Manuel da Costa, Can Utaka, and Atif Şeşu with two goals for Sivasspor, getting their four goals there. Ahmet Gürkem Gürk and Tidian Sane with the goals for Elazığspor. Sane actually had a penalty saved by Sivasspor goalkeeper Korcan Çelikay in the 84th minute. Manuel da Costa getting ejected for Sivasspor with two yellow cards in the span of 10 minutes in the 59th and 68th minutes. But Elazığspor's Çağlar Birinci with a direct red card right onto Rafik Jabur's back. And I don't know if you saw the highlights of that, but right at the end of the game, Birinci, he falls over and it studs up right in the back. I mean, you can pretty much see it off of League TV's website. You just go to Süper Lig Özet, O-Z-E-T. That's like the highlights. But, you know, with that, I mean, Sivasspor, impressive win there. Trabzonspor, Mustafa Yumlu scoring two goals there in the 56th and 71st minute to give Trabzonspor the win there. But before we go on to the Eskişehirspor, Kasımpaşa, and Gençlerbirliği Fenerbahçe matches, let's take a look at those two matches. I mean, what stood out for you there?
Well, I think the first thing I have to mention is, you know, Onur Kıvrak, the goalkeeper for Trabzonspor, gets his third straight clean sheet, which is, you know, the best in the league right now. And so Trabzonspor has been doing really well to, you know, shut out their opponents the last three games in a row. So maybe things are going to start looking a little brighter for them. Granted, you know, it's against some of these weaker clubs lately, like Konyaspor, and they've been playing Kayserispor and I think one of the other K teams before that. But I think that's definitely impressive and a good win for them. And then Elazığspor, it's kind of weird. It's the first time Elazığspor has lost at home. It's the first time Sivasspor has won on the road. It was sort of one of those games you wouldn't have thought was going to go that way, even especially after Sivasspor had already earned themselves a red card and were down a man, and then kind of managed to maintain their lead and build on it too. So that was definitely a sort of a thriller of a game. I think anytime you have six goals in a match, then that counts as a thriller. But good stuff. What did you think about all that?
Well, I just thought that Çağlar Birinci's red card, it was a really stupid thing to do. I mean, if you ever saw the replay, studs up right into the back, and he got a pretty lengthy suspension out of that deal. I'll get more to that in our next segment. But if we move on to the Eskişehirspor win against Kasımpaşa and the Fenerbahçe 1-0 win against Gençlerbirliği, I guess maybe we could talk about the Gençlerbirliği-Fenerbahçe match first. There was controversy in the 47th minute on Egemen Korkmaz and whether a penalty should have been given on that handball. And Rıdvan Dilmen on NTV's Used to Use Football said yes, but League TV's Marcus Merck said it was the correct call. And also former FIFA referee Ahmet Çakar also said it was the right call. And this is probably one of those judgment calls. And we were talking about it before the podcast began recording. And this is kind of like one of those judgment calls. You know, we were talking about last week about the whole Burak Yılmaz trap, you know, whether that was a handball or not, which led to the Didier Drogba goal. That put Galatasaray up 2-1 in the derby. And by the way, we still don't have anything about that yet, about what the result of that was yet. So bear with us. We'll know as soon as everybody else does. But I still say it was. I've been watching that thing for like ages on end or something like that. I mean, I've been watching it constantly. And it goes off his foot at first. So it seems like he's playing the ball with his foot, comes off the hand, and then goes right on the goal line, and Korkmaz clears it. And the goal line official was right there. He could have just made the call, but he said the play was fine. So I don't know if you see it anything different. I don't know if you see anything similar to that. But, you know, it's just one of those things where I think, you know, the referees might not get every call right, but it's up to the team to, you know, come back and win the game. You know, it's like what our friends over at Man About Football always say, you know, just man up, suck it up, and try and win. So Fenerbahce does win with a goal from Dirk Kuyt in the 60th minute, but everybody was talking about that handball.
Yeah, you know, for me it kind of comes down to whether or not you think his arm had a right to be extended out the way it was. You know, even though you're right, he was playing the ball, and he certainly didn't intend the handball or anything like that. But, I mean, you know, I could kind of see the argument that, like, his arm was kind of, like, way out there, and pretty much any sort of unlucky deflection would cause the ball to hit his arm, and that is usually a handball, though I see your point, too. Whether or not it was the right call, you know, I think you could say that Gençlerbirliği were unlucky, you know, in that, even if it was the right call, I think... The referees don't always get it right, you know what I mean? And so I think you kind of have to flip a coin in that situation, and maybe they get a penalty. This is the fourth time this season that Gençlerbirliği has lost by a score of 1-0. So they've been the victim of these really close games, and it seems like one goal has been enough to undo them. It's just sort of sad because they seem to hold their own for much of the game. They really could have used a penalty kick there, but yeah. Happens, I guess they say so.
Right, and I will agree with you. It was a judgment call. I mean, the guy was right there, the goal line official, and he could have called it a penalty. He could have called it a, he could have let the call stand the way he had. But I also noticed Egemen Korkmaz looks like you with the beard and all that. He's a dead on impersonator.
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, our beards do look sort of similar, I guess.
All right.
I don't know how I feel about that, but it's all right, I suppose.
Well, at least you can be mistaken for a football player then. Anyway, moving on to the Eskişehirspor Kasımpaşa match, in which Eskişehirspor wins 2-0. One thing that stood out to me was the Diego Angelo goal. And if you notice what happened, I mean, many of the Eskişehir Spor players before that ball was struck for that free kick, which led to the goal, I mean, many of them were offside. And I was taking a look at it, and, you know, I pause it and look at the replay. I'm thinking, huh, you know, if you drew a line between the defense and the Eskişehir Spor players who were, you know, trying to make contact with the ball before it was kicked and right when it was kicked, obviously Diego Angelo heading the ball into the back of the net, I don't know, man. It just seemed as though that was seemingly a more obvious offside call to me. But Eskişehir Spor still wins, so at least Diomantsi Kamara pads the lead right at the end to give Eskişehir Spor the win.
Yeah, you know, they didn't really show a lot of replays of that, you know, the situation. But it did, you're right, it did look pretty offside. Kasımpaşa, sort of an unfortunate result for them. They conceded a goal in every game this season so far, even in their three wins. So they're kind of having trouble keeping the balls out, I guess. You kind of felt that Eskişehir Spor dominated the highlight reel for the most part. Although, yeah, lucky to get that first goal, right? I mean, you can point to their later goal, but would that have come if they didn't already have the lead and Kasımpaşa didn't have to, you know, push guys forward at the end? Maybe not. So.
All right.
I think sort of week to week, our discussion is often about sort of one team's usually kind of unlucky with either a bad call or a missed call in this case or something else like that. But you know, another good game. There was kind of a crazy ball off the crossbar in this one, I think.
Yeah, I believe so too. I think we can move on to Monday's results then. So in the Kayseri Derby, Erciyesspor and Kayserispor play to a 1-1 draw, and Antalyaspor beats Beşiktaş 2-0. Pablo Moshe scoring for Kayserispor in the 66th minute. That was canceled out by a Sinan Kalolu goal for Erciyesspor in the 80th minute. Now as for the Antalyaspor Beşiktaş match, Lamine Diarra is scoring twice in 6 minutes in the 47th and 52nd minutes for Antalyaspor to give them the win there. So Antalyaspor hasn't been doing so well in the league so far. They were down in the bottom of the table with Gaziantepspor, actually. But they do get a win here. And it just seemed to me as though the central defense for Beşiktaş, if you have a very quick forward that can get behind them, you know, it probably will be easy to score goals against Beşiktaş. And for the Kayseri Derby, I mean, I couldn't get any opportunity to watch this match. It seemed as though it was a really festive atmosphere there, you know, no fighting, no huge incidents, I guess I could say. But, I think Antalyaspor, they definitely needed the win there for Kayserispor and Erciyesspor. It's just, 1-1 draw, let's move on.
Yeah, I mean, Antalyaspor, like you said, was a bottom-dwelling team. They jumped 5 places in the table with this win, which kind of tells you how close things are down there. And for the first time this season, Beşiktaş failed to score in a game. And you just, I mean, who would have predicted this, right?
Right.
But is this the undoing of Beşiktaş, right? I mean, they, you know, ever since the riot with the game against Galatasaray, they haven't really, you know, I think they wanted to bounce back from that. And this was not the way to do it.
Right. And I guess that will do it for the review of week 6. Let's move on to the standings, and keep in mind, we still don't know what the result of the derby is. There's no official word from the TFF, but I think we can safely assume that Galatasaray will win that, so they'll have 10 points. It just depends on what the score is. But Fenerbahce is leading the way with 15 points, Rizespor in second with 13, two teams with 12, that's Beşiktaş and Trabzonspor in third and fourth, and I guess we really should say there are three teams with 10 points, Galatasaray, Aksar Belediyespor, and Eskişehirspor, even though the TFF has not officially announced the result of the derby. So it's still too close to call at this point. It's 6 weeks gone. I guess I don't know if we can say early days anymore, because I think we are kind of getting into the nitty-gritty where everybody's really used to each other. But Fenerbahce leading, Rizespor still doing pretty well, and for Beşiktaş and Trabzonspor, still in the hunt.
Yeah, and I've been keeping an eye on the newcomer teams, right? Like Rizespor, Konyaspor, and Kayseri Erciyes. You know, none of those teams are in the relegation zone. Obviously, Rizespor in second right now, but you've got Konya and Kayseri Erciyes, I think, in 14th and 13th places, 13th place respectively. So, you know, staying alive. It's not, you know, hopefully they don't all end up being like, you know, yo-yo teams. Certainly, Rizespor looks like they have some potential, but I always like to keep my eye on the newbies. So far, so good for them.
Right, so far so good. Right in the relegation zone, Bursaspor with 5 and Gençlerbirliği and Gaziantepspor with 4, but I don't think that's really going to last too long, at least not with Gençlerbirliği. Bursaspor, I mean, it really kind of has to depend on this weekend as to what's happening there, but the schedule for Week 7 coming up this weekend before we head into the international break, and the international break is the following week after this weekend, I believe?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay, so that's why they have matches on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So Friday, the 4th of October, Karabükspor hosting Bursaspor. Saturday's matches will feature Kayserispor hosting Gaziantepspor, Konyaspor hosting Kayseri Erciyesspor, and Eskişehirspor hosting Beşiktaş. And on Sunday, Kasımpaşa hosts Elazığspor, Akhisarbelediyespor hosts Galatasaray, Rizespor hosts Antalyaspor, Sivasspor hosts Gençlerbirliği, and in probably the obvious match of the week, Fenerbahçe hosting Trabzonspor.
Well, that's going to be a game. I mean, you've got Fenerbahçe's on what, a 5-game winning streak, and Trabzonspor's on a 3-game win streak and clean sheet streak for that matter. And you know, at least one of those win streaks has to come to an end this weekend.
Right. Or they could just draw and then they could be on unbeaten streaks. But other than the Fenerbahçe Trabzonspor match, I mean, what else kind of stands out to you? Maybe the Eskişehirspor Beşiktaş match stands out. You know, Hürriyet Güçer is still out with that 3-match suspension. Slaven Bilic is still out with that 3-match suspension. It actually got upheld. His appeal did get rejected. I'll get more into that in the news. But, yeah, I would say Eskişehirspor Beşiktaş looks like the other match of the week on Saturday. And for maybe Akhisarbelediyespor and Galatasaray, Akhisarbelediyespor not doing too badly. You know, maybe we'll have to keep our eye out on Omar Niasse. And, of course, it'll be the league debut of Galatasaray's new coach, who we'll be discussing a lot more in detail later on in the podcast. But what other matches stand out for you?
Yeah, you know, I think Akhisarbelediyespor is not the team that you know, was fighting relegation most of the season. Last season, they've only given up one goal at home so far this season. So Galatasaray going into Akhisar will have themselves a bit of work to do, and I think that matchup otherwise wouldn't really cause you to raise your eyebrows, but you know, with the way things have been so mixed up in the Galatasaray camp lately, as far as management and also just trying to get the season going properly, I think that'll be a fun one to watch. Both teams really with a lot to gain with a win there, but I mean, you know, I think everyone's going to be looking forward to Fenerbahçe Trabzonspor. It's not just the statistics. I mean, these two teams, these fans really have had a lot of love for each other, let's say.
Right.
I think ever since you know, a few seasons ago when Trabzonspor sort of spoiled the Fenerbahce championship that they thought they won, and that was sort of an ugly scene, and it really hasn't been too friendly between those guys ever since. So
right.
I expect some dramatics there, I'd say.
I would definitely say so too. So that's going to end our league segment. Coming up, we're going to get into some news, including who Galatasaray hired to fill in their managerial vacancy to replace Fatih Terim. So stay tuned. And welcome back to Turkish Football Weekly. Let's take a look at some of the news going around Turkish football at the moment. Beşiktaş manager Slaven Bilic's appeal to have his 3-match suspension reduced has been rejected. Also, Felipe Melo's 2-match suspension has been upheld, so he will miss this weekend's game against Akhisarbelediyespor as well as Selçuk İnan. We should have mentioned that in our little league preview segment for Week 7. Elazığspor have extended the contract of midfielder Serdar Güler for an additional 3 years. His contract was originally set to expire in 2015 and now runs until 2018. Kalu Uche has been transferred from Kasımpaşa to El Jaish in Qatar for an unknown fee. The Nigerian forward scored 19 goals in the Turkish Super League last season, second to Burak Yılmaz, who had 24. Bursaspor have denied reports in certain Turkish media outlets that current manager Christoph Daum is set to be sacked and replaced with former Istanbul Büyükşehir Belediyespor and Turkish national team coach Abdullah Avcı, the former Turkish national team coach. Elazığspor's Çağlar Bürücü has been suspended for the next four matches and fined 26,000 Turkish lira for his direct card for his studs up and subsequent dissent against a match official. His, you know, little studs up kick that, Jeremy, you probably saw. And, of course, the big news of the week is Galatasaray has hired former Manchester City manager Roberto Mancini to fill their managerial vacancy. So before we get to Mancini and all the discussion we're going to have on that, let's talk a few things, at least two things that I did want to talk about. Kalu Uche is now gone from Kasımpaşa, and I kind of thought that, you know, maybe this guy would have helped Kasımpaşa a little bit this season. You know, he may have been a victim of the foreigner cap, so to speak. And as for Çağlar Bürücü, I mean, I got to say this. I looked at that replay. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? I mean, you got tripped up by Jabur. I mean, Jabur got a yellow card out of that, the Sivasspor player did. But definitely not warranting a studs up. Nice little stomp to the back of Jabur while he was standing. Four matches, you know, I don't know if that's enough or not, but, you know, it's kind of like a nice little punishment for really a dumb move. But the Kalu Uche move really, you know, kind of boggles my mind a little bit because I would have thought he would have improved on his form that we saw last season.
Yeah, I mean, has he even scored yet this season? I don't know if he has. Maybe he has a goal.
I should say, I don't think he's even played a game for Kasımpaşa this season, I don't think. If he has, he's probably made maybe a cameo appearance or maybe made one appearance, but I highly doubt he's even played for Kasımpaşa this season. I haven't seen his name, at least recently, I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's sort of a surprise. I mean, he's, you know, he's been one of the top scorers the last couple seasons even, and
he got signed by Kasımpaşa I think the previous summer, so he had 1 year, and then he scored 19 goals.
Yeah, exactly, and sad to see him go, but yeah, I guess the foreigner cap logic does make some sense. Qatar, I mean, really? maybe they're trying to shore up their leagues a little bit, and trying to get something going before 2022, I guess.
Well, there is kind of a joke going around that Turkey is kind of like the last stop in Europe before you head to one of the Arab leagues, the Gulf leagues or whatever, to go to Qatar or something for your last payday. I mean, that's kind of a running joke that some people have, I guess, within European football circles. But, you know, I would have liked to see him stay. He actually did pretty well last season. But anything you got to say about Çağlar Bürücü? Did you you actually see it?
Yeah, that was crazy. He's sort of on his back because he just got fouled, and you could almost see him just kind of like using his foot to maybe like, you know, make sure the other guy was clear of him or something. It wasn't anything like that. I mean, he just kind of like basically kind of like sort of slashed his heel into the back of the guy, and that was just a rush of the blood to the head. But even so, you gotta control yourself. It's the referee is gonna card the guy. I mean, it was a bad foul that he experienced, and so it's like, just have a little patience and let the referee handle it. But, you know, he just – and then he acted all surprised when he got a red card. Like, couldn't believe it. Like, dude, you just – I mean, you – every like, in plain view, you just, like, nailed this guy in the back with your studs up. Like, what did you think was going to happen? Maybe when he writes that check for 26 large, he'll – you know, it'll cause him to think a little bit next time. But man, that's just no good for your career. That's no good for anything. I mean, how many matches is he banned?
Four matches.
Yeah, that was that's embarrassing. Like, yeah, I like to talk up Turkish football. I like to talk up these games because they've all got sort of something crazy going on in them. But this is the kind of crazy I just don't want to see.
Right. Well, there was some little news about Bursaspor denying reports in some Turkish media outlets about Christoph Daum, and I really think they just need a little bit more time before they kind of improve, because I think they're still trying to get used to his style.
We usually err on the side of more time, I think.
Yeah.
Except not with Abdullah Avcı when he was the national team coach, but, you know.
Well, there's a difference with that. I mean, that was way out of his depth.
Yeah. I think if they do, I mean, if they do bring him back in for Bursaspor, that might be good. I mean, he did great things with Istanbul Büyükşehir Belediyespor. I mean, you know, look at how they flopped once he left, too.
Right, exactly. So, but anyway, Beşiktaş's manager, Slaven Bilic, his appeal has been rejected. And, you know, obviously Felipe Melo has his two-match ban upheld. But we saw that, you know, it did kind of affect Beşiktaş this past week against Antalyaspor, and, you know, they got to play Eskişehirspor next. So, you know, Bilic is obviously knows that he's doing something very well with Beşiktaş, obviously before the match with Galatasaray, of course. But
yeah, I really thought they were going to reduce his ban. You know, what could he have done? I mean, he's not responsible for the stuff for the fans pouring out onto the field. Yeah, he had some choice words for the officials, but yeah, no matter what you say, it shouldn't get you banned three matches. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. He wasn't violent from what I saw. He didn't pick up one of the security guards, you know, plastic chairs or whatever, and hurl it.
Yeah, hurling it out onto the pitch. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems kind of harsh to me. I don't know.
All right. So let's get to the major news about Roberto Mancini coming in to become Galatasaray's new manager. Tugay Kerimoğlu is going to reportedly be his assistant, the former Rangers star and Blackburn Rovers star, and obviously former Galatasaray star. He actually resigned from his post as Turkish national team under 20 coordinator to become Mancini's assistant. So the contract details for Roberto Mancini: he'll get 3.5 million euros for this season as his base salary, 4.5 million euros base salary for the next two seasons. It's a three-year deal. Now, should he lead the team to the league championship and qualify for the quarterfinals of the Champions League at the very least in a season, he'll get a bonus of 300,000 euros added on to his base salary for that season. Should he win the Turkish League title this season, he will get a 1.25 million euro bonus. If he wins the league title in any of the two seasons thereafter, he'll get a 1 million euro bonus. Champions League bonus, this is not cumulative, by the way. Quarterfinals, he'll get a 350,000 euro bonus. Semifinals, 500,000. If they reach the finals, 1 million euros. Should Galatasaray win the Champions League, he'll get a 2.5 million euro bonus.
You'd almost think the manager didn't have an incentive to, unless they put these bonuses in. Yeah. Like, wouldn't you try to win anyway? But yeah. I think it's kind of, maybe having the financial incentive, you know, just makes him care about it even that much more. But yeah. it seems kind of strange.
Yeah, there's a couple more bonuses I should mention.
I'm just jealous. Maybe.
Well, there's a Europa League bonus, and again, this is not cumulative. He'll get a 350,000 euro bonus if he reaches the final with Galatasaray. And if Galatasaray wins the Europa League, Mancini will get a 1.15 million euro bonus. Other bonuses include 500,000 euros for winning the UEFA Super Cup and 300,000 euros if he wins the FIFA Club World Cup. Interesting. I mean, I can't believe that they actually went that far.
Well, they got a plan for everything, I guess.
Yeah, they're definitely planning for everything. You know, the first thing I was thinking of when this hire was first announced, you know, I think one of the Turkish pundit programs I was watching, Telegol, was calling him Elemancini. You know, you know what Eleman means, right? You've heard the term Eleman? Well,
yeah, like handyman or something like that, like helper or something.
Yeah, they blended Mancini and Eleman, and they called him Elemancini. So when this was first hired, I just seem to think that this is probably not going to work, because, you know, in the last few years, we've seen a lot of guys come in, you know, with, you know, name value. I mean, Frank Rijkaard, let's not forget, he came from Barcelona to Galatasaray a few years ago. Really didn't do much. He didn't win a championship then. Luis Aragonés came to Fenerbahce after winning the Euro 2008 with Spain. Fenerbahce had a disappointing season. And if you take a look at Beşiktaş, especially the last few years, you know, Bernd Schuster came in, you know, the former Real Madrid coach. And if you remember, he said Turkish football looked like something out of the 60s. And let's not forget, Vicente Del Bosque was coach of Beşiktaş at one time. I mean, with Del Bosque, he was called the Butcher of Yeniköy, you know, for some reason. You know, people were doubting, you know, his football acumen, but after he leaves Beşiktaş, he wins a World Cup and Euro 2012. Now, okay, he had a really, really good national team in order to do it with, but even like the best players have to be coached by a good coach in order to win championships, because you can have like the best team on paper, but if they're not coached well, obviously that team is not going to live up to its potential. But
on the flip side, I mean, you're right. Some chefs can only cook good food if they've got the best ingredients, right?
Right.
And it'll be interesting to see which case Roberto Mancini is, right? Like,
right. I mean,
is he the kind of guy who can work with maybe limitations that he wasn't used to at Man City?
Right, exactly. Because you looked at Manchester City. I mean, they probably wiped
gobs of money coming in there.
Yeah, exactly. They've got like Abu Dhabi money behind them. The Abu Dhabi group. It's like that's huge money. And I'm thinking, you know, with Mancini, you know, Galatasaray we know is in a good amount of debt. I mean, let's put it this way. They've got a good amount of money, but it's not like they've got the money that obviously Manchester City has. However, I mean, there is one thing that I do want to mention about it, and that is Mancini has never really had to deal with such a foreigner cap that was so strict. You know, obviously he's going to have to choose out of his 10 foreigners that he has at Galatasaray, you know, he's going to have to choose 6 per league week, you know. And I recently tweeted a friend of mine, Kartik Krishnire, about Mancini because he's a Manchester City fan. And this is what he had to write to me about him. If you are looking for style a la Barca or Arsenal, you won't get it from him. If you are looking for results all by playing without width or panache, he's your guy. Results ultimately are what matter, and his record is unimpeachable. But City has always fancied itself on playing progressive football, so that's where the tension came in. Also, he is a very poor man manager. And also, Kartik wrote this about his strengths and weaknesses. Mancini's strengths are tactics and pragmatism. His weaknesses is relations with players and man management. So obviously, we're looking at it, and I'm thinking the possibility for him to become another big-name bust that came into Turkey and didn't do anything is there, because, you know, he's getting paid, I believe, more money than Fatih Terim ever did. I think the most Terim made in the last two seasons when he was coaching Galatasaray was about 2.5 million euros. Don't quote me on that, but that's what I have heard. So if Kartik is accurate with this, and I trust his opinion on football, I trust his soccer opinion, when it comes down to it, I mean, Mancini has to deal with a very strict foreigner cap. He's going to have to choose between 6 of those non-Turks, and he's going to have to put them in. And if what Kartik is saying is correct, he's probably going to have a little bit of trouble, because, you know, we've always kind of said that, you know, the Turkish player isn't exactly up to a very good standard. I mean, it's not like what Mancini was used to when he was in Italy or even when he was in England. But I don't know. This just doesn't seem like a good idea. I know we'll talk about the Galatasaray's match with Juventus later. He'll definitely understand the European game. However, I really don't think he'll be able to adapt to all the nuances in the Turkish league.
I think it's very difficult to predict how a foreign coach is going to do in Turkey. I think you're definitely correct in saying that there's like a sort of historical precedent for, you know, expectations to, shall we say, exceed reality in most cases like this. But whether or not this was the best decision, I mean, it's definitely a pretty big risk given how much money Galatasaray is willing to throw around. But, you know, if apparently they feel like they've got the money to do that, number one. You know, secondly, it's like they are a big enough club that they can expect, you know, greater success than what they've seen so far this season, being about the middle of the table. Hopefully, you know, when Mancini was in England, he was also a foreigner there, and it's, you know, it was a different situation. But it's like, you know, there are some signs that he's able to handle working with a diverse range of players and talent and sort of situations. If it all works out, I'll kind of look at it, and it'll seem like it made sense. And if it doesn't, you could kind of see that too. I don't know.
Right.
I wouldn't begin to try to make a prediction, but you're right. It really could go either way.
Right. But I'm basing it more on, you know, recent history, because you remember when Frank Rijkaard was at Galatasaray?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, did he really all do all that well, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, yeah, not a minute. It was not toward the end, certainly. I mean, Galatasaray was, you know, they had an okay season. I think one thing's for sure, managers don't seem to stick around too long.
Right. Here's another name that, I should have mentioned as well, and that's Goose Hiddink. And, well, he failed in Turkey twice, you know, once with Fenerbahce way back in the early 90s. And, well,
national
I would
team.
And the national team, yeah. Although maybe with the national team, it might not have been as much of a failure as people might see on the surface, because he did get a lot of, like, diasporal Turks to choose Turkey for as their national team, or at least a good amount of them. But I also had a conversation with Goal.com's Enes Köylü, and you know, his initial tweet was, "How does Roberto Mancini keep getting work?" And I basically responded that that doesn't sound like a lot of praise. Then again, I don't think he knows what he's in for if he does sign on the line. And this was before he ultimately signed. And he responded, "Given his incompetence in a fairly sane league, I'm inclined to agree." And I asked about how incompetent, and he responded in regards to Mancini, "Awful. Playing players out of position, insisting on silly formations, buying bad players, alienating stars, not good." Now, of course, there's going to be the argument of he did win an EPL title with Manchester City. What was it? 2 years ago, I think. Yeah, because last year was Manchester United. And it's, yeah, it was actually the season before last season. And, you know, Enes responded that it was as much him / the players as Manchester United throwing it away. United had an 8-point lead with a month to go. And then you look at his European track record. You know, Enes even said, you know, you only have to look at that European record to see his true pedigree or lack thereof. So just a lot of different perspectives on it. But, you know, I mean, for me, I don't really doubt, like, Mancini's capable of being a good coach. I don't doubt, you know, his acumen. I believe, you know, he is pretty good for Turkish league standards. But the problem is, Turkey's kind of like the wild, wild west here. You know, it's a much, shall we say, different football culture than what anybody in Western Europe would be used to. I mean, you only have to look at recent history, and that's what I'm basing my argument on in terms of named coaches like Rijkaard, Goose Hiddink, Luis Aragonés, Vicente del Bosque, Bernd Schuster, and even Joachim Löw was actually at Fenerbahce in the late 90s as their coach, and I think he got the sack pretty quickly. I can't remember off the top of my head, but he was there. I guess that was before he became Joachim Löw, like the super genius German coach of the German national team. But still, we have seen big name coaches for Turkish league standards come into Turkey, but yet they don't seem to succeed. Maybe it's because of unrealistic expectations, maybe, or maybe it's because they just haven't been able to adapt. And for Mancini, first of all, the obvious thing is going to be the foreigner cap, because he's going to have to choose six of those foreigners. It's not like he could go like the Champions League, like we saw against Juventus, and put in, you know, eight non-Turks or whatever. So it's going to be one of the factors that will determine how successful Mancini is.
True, but at the same time, I mean, Akisar Bilodeyspor isn't exactly Juventus either. I mean, you know, I think you're right. I have a question, though. Like, you know, do you have anyone in mind that you think would have been a better choice for Galatasaray?
That's a good question. I really don't think there was going to be any other good choice. But
I mean, there really isn't an obvious one, is there?
No, there was never an obvious choice. I mean, there were rumors that Dick Advocaat was apparently in negotiations, and Galatasaray were interested in Roberto Di Matteo, if you will. But it just seems as though, to me, like, yeah, it's the best of a bad situation, but, you know, like we argued last week with the whole Terim thing, you know, maybe we should have seen the Terim firing coming, but firing Terim and now hiring Mancini, well, Mancini is going to have a learning curve, and it's going to take some time before, you know, his system kicks in. It's not like he's going to, you know, try and win right away. I mean, I know I've referred to the whole new coach smell concept where, you know, a team does get a bit of a nice little streak going, you know, a nice little good run of form going to impress the new coach. But when it comes to, like, named coaches for Turkish league standards, you know, historically, and this is what I'm basing the argument on, they just don't seem to do well. I mean, with Del Bosque back in Beşiktaş, I mean, he was questioned about his methods a lot. But look what he did after he left Beşiktaş. So, obviously it just seems to be like when it comes to Turkey, I mean, they're kind of behind the times on a lot of footballing concepts, if you will.
Yeah, I think I think this whole change kind of makes Galatasaray a team to watch, and I hope that he can handle the situation at Galatasaray, but you know, I think the real question is how much patience will the club have if things don't go the way that they're hoping, right? If he can't meet their expectations, he certainly has the financial incentive to, right? But
sure,
you know, if he, you know, how much will he listen to the advice of the people near him? How much will he kind of be a rebel and do his own thing? That will be really interesting to see. But in the meantime, you know, how much patience will the club have if it doesn't all work out? You know,
yeah.
Hopefully we don't come to that. At least I hope. But
you could. Never know. I mean, a few bad results and people will start questioning Mancini's footballing acumen. I mean, I've seen it before with like all these pundit shows. You know, they're always questioning, like, why is this guy playing this guy, or why is this guy being benched, why is this guy not named to the match day roster even though you paid like billions of euros for this guy? I'm like, well, that's the foreigner cap for you, and you know, there's a lot of other things. I mean, they just talk about a lot of BS just to put up a show. Obviously we don't do that here, but
we try not to.
But that's the thing, you know. I think if I'm going to conclude my little argument for the Mancini hiring, I would say this. If it doesn't work out, I wouldn't be surprised. It just seems to me as though that this might be a bad idea. But if Terim was going to be fired, and, you know, we made the argument that, you know, things weren't all so rosy between Terim and club management, obviously, you know, they could have gotten rid of Terim before the season started, or, you know, maybe during the summertime, but getting rid of him when the season is going on is a bad idea. Will Mancini become the guy that will make people forget Terim? I'm kind of inclined to think no.
I'm kind of inclined to think, I hope so, but, you know,
I want to hear your argument. You know, give me your argument.
I guess my argument is, you know, first of all, if Terim was being sort of a pain in the butt and just, you know, was kind of a guy that at least on sort of when dealing with the board and everything like that, you got to be able to deal with that. That's sort of an unacceptable situation. I mean, it sounds like the relationships there were deteriorating, and so that situation couldn't be sustained. So Galatasaray had to do something, right? I guess they felt like they had to anyway, and that's good enough for me. And you know, who are they going to put in his spot? Well, you know, Galatasaray, they feel like they're sort of a bad situation, and they've got to do something. I don't really see this as being like a big blunder, right? And I don't see how it, you know, on paper it looks okay, but I don't see them flopping. I mean, Galatasaray, they've got the players. I think they performed fairly well, actually, even so far this season. And then when we get to talking about their game with Juventus and so forth, but you know, they haven't been terrible. And you know, if relationships are bad, you know, in your upper management, in the echelons of upper management, then you got to do something. And so, what were they to do? So, Roberto Mancini, he's been around. I think he kind of wants to pick himself back up and, you know, and prove that he can coach a team that doesn't have unlimited money and, you know, unlimited, almost unlimited foreigners on the field, right? So I think there's enough incentive for him to make a show, and he's been around. I think this situation is very capable of working out, and I wouldn't, and even if it doesn't, I'd sort of hesitate to say that this was like a big blunder. I don't think it's like an obvious mistake from Galatasaray.
Okay, so I see your argument, and we will end this segment of Turkish Football Weekly. Coming up, we will have how Mancini did in his first game as Galatasaray manager, as we talk about the European matches for both Galatasaray and Trabzonspor in the Champions League and Europa League, respectively. So stay tuned. Back again on Turkish Football Weekly. Let's talk about the European adventures for both Galatasaray and Trabzonspor. We'll start off with Roberto Mancini's debut as Galatasaray manager against Juventus. So in the Juventus arena, Galatasaray draws with Juventus 2-2. Galatasaray goals were scored by Didier Drogba in the 36th minute and Umut Bulut in the 88th minute. Bulut actually came on for Wesley Sneijder in the 74th minute there. The Juventus goals were scored by Arturo Vidal in the 78th minute by a penalty and Fabio Quagliarella in the 87th minute. So Galatasaray with 1 point from two matches. For me, this game, I mean, I only saw the second half of this game, but it seems like...
No, finish your sentence.
It seemed as though, like, Galatasaray were parking the bus most of the time. It was like 90% of the time Galatasaray were just parking the bus. And I think I could probably count on one hand, and I think that may include the goal. I can't remember which. I can't remember too much about the game, but I could probably count on one hand, or maybe counting Umut Bulut's goal, I could probably count on the other hand, the amount of times that Galatasaray really threatened Juventus in the second half. I mean, the first half, it seemed as though that the first goal by Didier Drogba came against the run of play, but unfortunately, all my streams and the way I watched the match just seemed to be crapping out on me, but, you know, I did get to see the second half. I actually listened to this match off of TuneIn Radio. I don't know if you have the app on your phone or not.
Not yet,
okay, but yeah, they have a lot of Turkish... radio stations, you know, like League Radio, TRT Radio, and I think they also have Radio Barca, where you could, like, listen to Barcelona games in English. I actually listened to the game off RAI Radio, and it was all in Italian. I was thinking, I have no idea what they're saying, but I'll figure it out when I'm watching and listening to it at the same time. But, yeah, I mean, the penalty, it just seemed to me as though, like, yeah, you kind of got clipped, but even if you argue that... you know, he might have gone down with the slightest of challenges. I mean, to me, it just looked like a stonewall penalty. I mean, we were arguing about, you know, whether it was a penalty to Egemen Korkmaz earlier, and now people are going to argue with the referee with this. So, I mean,
the penalty bothers me. Well, first, let me just say that Galatasaray's first half was amazing. You know, I wouldn't say they totally dominated, but they had good runs, good chances, and obviously a goal, which sort of came from a sort of a defensive blunder. But, you know, everything looked pretty positive going into the second half. And then it was just, well, you saw that. It was just, you know, Galatasaray sort of getting lucky that they didn't get scored on time and time again until finally the penalty kick happened. And it was like the foul, let me just say, as far as penalties go in terms of the infraction that apparently justified it, that was weak. For me, you know, I can see the arguments for that being a penalty. For you, it was fairly clear cut, but for me, it was, you know, that was weak. The forward had no chance of getting near the ball. I mean, so yeah, he kind of got blocked off, right? But it, I don't know. When I saw it, I was like, you got to be kidding me. Because for me, it takes a little bit extra for a penalty to be a penalty, right? You can kind of get away with some more pushing and stuff, some more like boxing out, I guess I would say, in the penalty area than on the rest of the field, because it's like calling a penalty for that. It just seemed weak to me. Yeah. You can hear the tone in the...
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I'm not saying, oh my goodness, what a travesty, but I'm saying like that annoyed me because nothing was going to come of that play sort of regardless. And there was a lot of... Juventus players especially seem to go down pretty easily. I did like the refereeing job for the most part, though. I forget who it was, but he, you know, kind of let a lot of little stuff go, which I like, you know.
Right.
Like, a lot of referees will just blow the whistle every 10 seconds, like, oh, there was like a little foul there. And yes, it was a foul, but just kind of like let it go, you know what I mean? And he did a great job of that, so I had a lot of respect for the ref up until the penalty kind of that. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, at least
I don't like penalties in general, but don't know. What were we going to say?
Well, at least for Galatasaray, they did recover enough after the Quagliarella goal in the 87th minute, with Umut Bulut scoring a minute later. So at least Galatasaray did make the comeback in order to get a point out of Torino.
That's true. And on the road, I mean, you know, getting a draw on the road with Juventus, that's fine, right? I've mentioned before that in terms of the group standings in the Champions League, in terms of the group, Galatasaray really needed to just not lose this game. And, you know, I'll let you describe what the group looks like. But basically, Galatasaray, if they can, I think they're still in okay shape, you know, at least they want to get second place so they don't have to go down to the Europa League. Getting a result on the road against Juventus, it kind of suggests that they can get an even better result at home. And I'm sort of counting on everybody being able to handle FC Copenhagen, which even Copenhagen held Juventus to a draw. So Galatasaray, they can handle FC Copenhagen and they can play against Juventus like they did, but with a home field advantage, then they're looking okay. I was happy with the draw as a result. It just seemed kind of sad because they had greater potential than that, I felt.
Well, Real Madrid beat Copenhagen, I think, what was it, like 4-0 in the other game? So it's looking like Madrid is going to be runaway winners so far. It just depends on their matches against Juventus coming up in the next two match days. But at least for Galatasaray, there was good news that they salvaged a draw. Trabzonspor also drew with Lazio, another Italian team, in the Europa League, but they're going to be kicking themselves because they had a 3-1 lead at halftime, and they blew that. Yusuf Erdogan in the 12th minute, Adrian Marzewski in the 22nd minute, and Paulo Henrique in the 34th minute with the goals for Trabzonspor there. Ogenyi Onyazi in the 29th minute, Sergio Flocari in the 84th and 85th minute with the goals for Lazio. Flocari actually came into the match in the 61st minute. Trabzonspor has 4 points for two matches in the Europa League. So this is one that I think Trabzonspor really threw this away. You know, I mean, Flocari scoring two goals within the span of 2 minutes. They got to defend. And unfortunately, for like 2 minutes, Trabzonspor's defense was, they just couldn't know how to respond to Flocari. You know, just a lot of defensive lapses. And you could argue that Juventus had a huge defensive lapse in the Umut Bulut goal. However, if we go back to the Trabzonspor-Lazio match, I mean, Trabzonspor had a 3-1 lead at halftime. And then right in the last 10 minutes, they blow it. And Lazio is going to be happy that they got a point out of Trabzon.
Yeah, I think that was definitely disappointing as well, just because it seemed, you know, like with the Galatasaray match, they came out with a lead going into halftime and looked to have the stuff to get all 3 points and could only get one from it. But, you know, this being a home game for Trabzonspor, you know, you kind of hope for better. But I think they're still okay, right? They're tied at the top of the group with Lazio with 4 points. And Apollon got the win against Legia Warsaw. So they've got 3 points and Warsaw's got none. And I think Trabzonspor's next couple of matches are against the Legia Warsaw team, so they'll be able to potentially get, you know, a bunch of points there. So Trabzonspor is still in pretty good shape, but yeah, it does kind of hurt to not be able to close out a 3-1 lead with less than 10 minutes left in the game, and you're up 3-1. You should be able to finish that one off, but I guess they're glad when the final whistle did come because things were not trending in their direction. Could have been worse for Trabzonspor, but Galatasaray, they don't look as good because they're at the bottom of their table, you know, with just 1 point. But like I say, their next couple of games are against FC Copenhagen, and they should be able to get a bunch of points from those games. FC Copenhagen, by the way, still having a terrible season, one of their worst in the Danish league. So, you know, that doesn't say Galatasaray is having their best season either, but I was really happy when my team from Denmark and Bombu beat FC Copenhagen in the big derby there in a 3-2 thriller last week. So anyway, hopefully Galatasaray can have similar success as the good people of Bombu did recently.
Alrighty, so I think that's going to do it here for Turkish Football Weekly this week. Talked about a lot of subjects this week, and of course next week we'll definitely have the international weekend to look forward to. That should be always fun. And it will be do or die time by that time, so we'll definitely have some coverage over what the roster is, and of course the crucial matches against Estonia and the Netherlands. So, Jeremy, thank you again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, as always. I enjoyed it very much.
And we thank you for listening to Turkish Football Weekly this week, and we will see you all next time.